City, no one knows for sure where the Boonslick Trail begins or ends. Some believe it stretches from St. Louis County to Jackson County and as far south as the Osage Country. But it's the ghost stories and folklore from these places that start and stop across generations and have no boundaries in our imagination. This is Central Standard. I'm Jabalani LaFall. And joining us now is Mary Barrill, author of The Haunted Boonslick, Ghost, Ghouls, Monsters of Missouri's Heartland. She joins us from KBIA Studios in Columbia on the campus of the University of Missouri. Mary, welcome to the show.
Thank you, and happy Halloween.
Happy Halloween to you indeed. Now, you've written historical and travel books about Missouri. This book seems to combine the two in a way with folk tales and a little bit of macabre to it. What was the inspiration for this book?
Well, every region of the country has its ghost stories. In this country, they go back certainly to the indigenous peoples. So anytime you come into a new area, you know you're going to run across something to do with murder, mayhem, or other kinds of hauntings.
Is the Boonslick one of the most haunted regions in the Midwest, as you have contended in some passages of the book?
Oh, I think so. Alton, Illinois, of course, always claims its place as the most haunted area in the Midwest, but I'd put the Boonslick a very close second. Our ghosts are, however, a little less known.
And why is that? Did they not have a good PR agent, or what?
I think so. I think one of the issues is in Missouri, the area of the Boonslick was the Santa Fe Trail.
Right.
And, of course, that was a commercial area. So people really didn't have time to worry about ghosts. The literature of Missouri turned out to be along the rivers. Mark Twain, who, of course, also told some wonderful ghost stories, but is better known for Tom Sawyer and Huckleberry Finn. And Missouri also had a reputation as quite a show-me, hard-headed state. So ghost stories tend to be less easily conveyed.
And less easily believed as well.
Well, I think the Missourians I've run into are very willing to share their ghost stories and their traditions. I think what it is today, we are more comfortable in doing so. We don't seem to be acting as if we're nuts if we say, oh, sure, my house is haunted, or yes, I've seen a ghost.
Is this book sort of a historical take on how supernatural tales start and what the origins of supernatural tales are? It seems almost anthropological in its approach.
Well, it's funny. I've had a few people say that, and I tend to look at ghost stories. I'm both a folklorist and an historian, so I look at them from an historical point of view. What can I get from that ghost story? I'm originally from New York, so I grew up with the stories of Washington Irving and the Headless Horseman, which had some historical roots. So looking at the stories out here, it's interesting to, when they're attached to a particular name or a house or a place, to go in and see how much of this could be true. Can any of this be true? You know, so I think approaching ghosts through history not only enlightens people as far as their history goes, but also brings a little bit more light into the darker corners of our stories.
You point out in some of your stories that most ghost stories, especially the local ones, happen because someone actually thought they had a supernatural experience. And then from there, it kind of turns into folklore or takes on mythical properties, if you will. Do you find that to be true in the stories from the Boonslick?
Well, in the Boonslick, you had several types of ghost stories. I think some of my favorite are ones that started out as jokes. You had the ghost of Hale Ridge, which frightened the life out of people as they would be coming into the town of Boonville. This white, shrieking phantom would arise from behind a schoolhouse and then quickly disappear until somebody got up the nerve to go and explore a bit and found that some of the local guys, this is around the 1830s, had set up a scaffolding with old sheets and textiles on it, and they could pull it up out of the well, and as soon as they let go of it, it would drop back into the well. So it frightened enough people, I think, probably to stop at the local tavern and steady their nerves. I mean, it did produce some good business for, you know, at least one local entrepreneur.
And tell us more about the localized aspects of these stories, such as the ghost music of Blind Boone, for instance, a famous pianist here in Missouri.
Well, that's a wonderful story, and it had sort of a personal resonance for me. John Blind Boone is considered one of the finest classical musicians and composers of the late 19th and early 20th century. He is also considered a major contributor to the beginning of ragtime music, although that wasn't something he claimed quite as much as he did the classical music. He lived in Columbia, was well-known and well-loved within the city, both in the white and the black districts. He had several huge pianos he was known to play. His house is still existing. It's in back of one of the Baptist churches right off of Broadway. And he was known to sit and play music, and people could hear it coming out of his home. Well, his piano, after his death, was sold and traveled around Missouri. But before it left Columbia, it had been in one of the local schools. And one of the stories was that Mary Paxton Keeley, a journalist, was interviewing people about their experiences with Blind Boone. And she talked to a rather young woman who was staying there with her daughter one day. And the woman said, "Oh, of course, I love Blind Boone's music. I love hearing him play it." And, you know, Mary said to her, "Well, but he passed away in, you know, the 1920s, and this was 1954. She said, "You're too young. How did you hear him play?" She goes, "Oh, well, I hear him play as I go by the school. I've heard him several times." And she named a number of tunes she had heard. And she believed that Boone was playing the piano at one of the schools and that she had heard it. Okay, that's a great, nice, local kind of a ghost story and very sweet and shows the connection of a man to his community and how they continue to hear him, essentially. Well, I gave that story at one of the presentations I was doing, and I had a woman come up with quite an elderly woman with her and introduced her mother to me. And she said, "This is the little girl who heard Blind Boone play." And she proceeded to tell me how she would walk by the school with her mother, and they could hear Blind Boone playing. So it was just amazing to hear that kind of a story. And people believed it, and I was talking to someone who essentially heard a ghost. So who am I to say it didn't really happen?
Indeed. You're listening to Central Standard on 89.3 FM KCUR, streaming live on KCUR.org. I'm Jabalani LaFall. Our guest is Mary Baril, author of The Haunted Boonslick, Ghosts, Ghouls, and Monsters of Missouri's Heartland. She joins us from KBIA Studios in Columbia. We got a bit of the crackle on that transmission. Perhaps the ghosts are listening in to this broadcast as we speak.
Oh, definitely.
Definitely.
They create all kinds of disturbances.
Speaking of which, Kansas City, have you had any supernatural encounters yourself, or do you know of any ghost stories that are part of your family lore? 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. Or you can convey your macabre tales via email at centralstandard@kcur.org. or via Twitter, where our handle is @KCURCST. Once again, share with us, Kansas City, any supernatural encounters you've had yourself or ghost stories that are part of your family lore. If you heard Blind Boone or Scott Joplin play when you walked across a school, we want to know. 816-235-2888. 816-235-2888. And the reason we're asking you to share your ghost stories is because this is a sort of ghost story hour that we have as the creak of the door happens live on radio. I don't know where it came from. I'm a little spooked. How about you, Mary?
No, I think I'm used to ghosts.
You're used to ghosts. Speaking of ghosts, who is Guinea Sam? Let's talk about Guinea Sam,
he deserves a book on his own, and I hope somebody sits down and writes it. His name was really Sam Nightingale. He lived in Boonville. He probably was kidnapped from the Guinea coast of Africa and brought to Missouri, also, I believe, to Louisiana as a slave. Eventually was brought to Missouri with the family. And his story was that he was blown over from Africa in a cannonball and that it hit a steamboat and sank it, and he swam ashore in Boonville, and that he was there to make sure the town ran well. The description of him is of a small, thin man. He wore gold earrings in his ear. He passed away in the early 20th century. He's buried in one of the local cemeteries. He was quite well respected by both the white and black communities as a community leader, and as someone who held together the folklore of the African-American community. But he was also known as a conjurer, which is not the same as voodoo. A lot of people consider him a voodoo practitioner. But he was more of someone who could take on the dark forces and remove evil from a person, almost like an exorcism, and was known to do that for people who had been, you know, cursed or overseen is another way of saying it, and was, again, very well respected. He was known to help out people. He was walking down along the river one day, and there was a work group, and they were chopping trees. It was very cold, and he asked the men, "Why don't you have a fire going?" And they said, "Well, you know, if we stop chopping, you know, our bosses are going to hear it right up in Boonville." And he said, "Put down those axes." And they were like a little, he says, "Put down those axes and start a fire." So they put down the axes. And as they were building the fire, they turned around. The axes were floating up in the air and went over to the trees and started to chop. So for the rest of the day, they sat around the fire and got warm, and the axes did their work. And Guinea Sam helped out. So there were legends like that throughout Fayette and Boonville. The story is that he was done in by a conjure woman in St. Louis and disappeared in a puff of smoke. So we don't really know if Guinea Sam disappeared.
Our guest is Mary Barile, author of The Haunted Boomslick, Ghosts, Ghouls, and Monsters of Missouri's Heartland. She joins us from the KBIA studios in Columbia. She's been telling us stories about the ghost of Blind Boone's music and a funny, intriguing character named Guinea Sam from some of the ghost, ghoul, and goblin tales of her book. And we've been asking you, Kansas City, have you had any supernatural encounters yourself, or do you have ghost stories that are part of your family lore? 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. Or you can write in at centralstandard@kcur.org or via Twitter, where our handle is @kcurcst. We're going to go to Brad in Independence, who has an interesting story. Brad, welcome to Central Standard.
Well, thank you. I saw a ghost when I was 18 years old. It's still as vivid as yesterday, and I had a friend with me, and where it was at 72nd Natioc in Overland Park. I grew up right next door to the oldest occupied residence in Johnson County. The reason I know that is because they have a plaque on the front of the house. And I grew up right behind that house, and I was outside running around with a friend of mine at about 2 o'clock in the morning, in the middle of the summer. We walked around to the front of the house, right where the lots kind of connect, and there was a figure in white clothing, and the clothing was blowing in the wind, even though it was dead summer, a full moon, not a breeze or nothing stirring, but yet here's a white figure at 2 o'clock in the morning with her I couldn't tell if it was a man or a woman. Anyway, it was right there. It's just east of Antioch on 72nd Street. Since then, I've even stopped and talked to other people that live around there. They've never seen it, but I saw it.
Would you say, Brad, that this experience has haunted you for most of your life?
Well, I don't know about haunted me, but I believe in ghosts. I saw it.
All right.
So that's my story right there at 72nd Antioch.
Okay, thank you, Brad.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
Brad from Independence at 72nd in Antioch said he saw a white figure with flowing, we can assume, sheets of some kind, and it haunts him to this day.
Some.
You have some as well, Mary?
Well, we have some typical views of what ghosts look like. One is that they always appear at night, although many hauntings appear during the day. Ghosts often appear in their grave clothing, which is a very old tradition. It really kind of depends on the type of ghost it is. Some ghosts sort of repeat their actions. One of the theories is they don't know they're dead, so they keep coming back to a place and doing something like, walking up the stairs or preparing dinner. Other ghosts may be coming back to tell you something or warn you. And other ghosts are believed to be attached to the land that they loved a great deal. So
and
they don't care.
And we heard about that, Mary, from Brad. He seems to have a sense of place with the ghost he saw directly at the corner of 72nd and Antioch when he was 18, and he remembers it to this day. Did you visit most of or all the locations of some of these stories just to get a sense of place?
Yeah, no, I visited every one of them. Some of them were difficult to find, particularly in parts of the Ozarks. The spook of Clark's Ford, that area south of Boonville, was a little difficult to find. But once you get down into it, you can completely understand why people had the experiences they did. So, yeah, I feel very strongly. And Independence is, and Liberty are both quite haunted areas. They're very well known by paranormal investigators or historians for their hauntings.
Teresa and Lee Summit, welcome to Central Standard.
Thank you. My story comes from Neenah, Wisconsin. And I was visiting my in-laws, and my son was 16 months old, and he's now 16 years old. And we were there for the death and the death of my husband's uncle. And this was going to be his burial. So we were having a family dinner. And this Uncle Bob, he loved my son. He always said he was such a great baby. And so here we are at this dinner, and there's probably 10 people around the table. And we're a very Lutheran family. And we'd said our blessing. And then my son, who is, 16 months or 18 months old, speaks well, but not that well. And he looks in the corner where there's nobody there, and he says, "Uncle Bob." And I said, "Wow." "Sam, what? What, Spencer?" And he pointed in the corner again, and he said, "Uncle Bob." And then his finger moved to point to where my father-in-law was sitting. And so I thought, whoa, that is really weird. And I thought, I'll never know the truth. And we all looked at each other as, okay, this doesn't explain things we know. And then we were sitting around an hour later in the living room talking, and I was with my husband's aunt, Donna, was Bob's wife, and the very next day she was having the sale of a lot of land that was there. So this was kind of a significant evening or significant weekend. Anyway, I just sat and talked to her, and I said, I just wish I knew that Spencer even knew what Uncle Bob looked like. And from across the room, this little 18-month-old walked over and pointed to me a picture of Uncle Bob right next to us. And he hadn't been in this conversation, and he just came over and did that. And to this day, I believe in ghosts.
That's pretty freaky and very interesting and very ironic. Thank you, Teresa, for lending us your tale. 816-235-2888. Mary Baril, author of The Haunted Boomslick, Ghosts, Ghouls, and Monsters of Missouri's Heartland. You say you believe in ghosts. How spooked are you by some of these tales that you've heard about or read about or written about? Or are you immune to the scary?
Oh, I'm certainly not immune to the scary. There are certain movies I definitely won't watch, and particularly alone. I'm not afraid of ghosts, whatever and whoever they are. I don't think. In fact, the one we just heard is what is known as a crisis apparition, and very often it does occur with young children. There have been many stories of children playing with a plastic telephone or something, and getting a phone call from grandma who had passed away maybe an hour before. So these occur frequently enough. They're in the literature. They're in reports that I certainly believe in them. There are places I don't want to be locked in by myself for the night. I don't care for the state penitentiary in Jeff City. I would not want to be there by myself at night. I don't get a good feeling there. And whether
Mary,
it's – yes.
I don't want to be there during the day.
No, I know. But at least you can yell for somebody to let you out the door. That's an unhappy place.
Depends on what you're in for, I guess.
Yeah. I guess. Whatever spirits are left there, they're not people I necessarily feel I can help. They're unhappy. It's a sad, sad place. So I think sad spirits upset me.
Why do you think we hear about these encounters with very young children or older people actually seeing them?
I think
hear. We always hear about experiences people had when they were young or experiences that older people have. We never, not never, but rarely hear about a sort of middle of the road, middle age experience.
Well, I think kids don't have that, you know, preconceived notion that seeing a ghost is something odd or bizarre.
Right.
It's just another thing they're discovering, you know, in their lives. And I think people who are older have seen a lot, have experienced a lot, are more than willing to think, well, you know, maybe it is something slightly different. What's the problem in believing in that? You know, ghost stories go back thousands and thousands of years. I mean, the ancient Egyptians had ghost stories. You know, it's part of essentially being human. So I think keeping an open mind, and if you don't want to believe in a ghost, that's fine. But, you know, perhaps you can learn something from the ghost story itself. You know, what does that mean? You know, what is it telling you? What do you think? You thought you saw your grandmother, so what does this mean?
Mary, you're sitting right there in Columbia at the KBIA studios in Jesse Hall. Talk about the haunting of the University of Missouri campus. You're calling in from Columbia. You mentioned some of the hauntings of the University of Missouri campus.
Oh, yes. We have some fun hauntings. The chancellor's residence has a ghost, probably of one of the earlier presidents, Alice Reed or Dean. I never remember her last name, and I apologize. She is often seen dancing on the upper floors. She has, to my knowledge, played with the elevator quite frequently that's in the house. She was the first woman to live there and was quite well loved by the students. They named a little lake on campus after her. So a lot of us believe that she never left the house. There have been reports of seeing her as early as the late 19th century, and so not too long after she had passed away. Jesse Hall, I'm told, is haunted, although I haven't gotten too many first-person accounts on that yet, so I'm working on that. But we do have the Conley House, where it's believed Aunt Sarah Conley would float down the stairs. People report being having their clothing pulled or feeling like they're being watched. Some very typical hauntings. One of the legends was that she was buried in the house. That was her last request. And I did some research. I found a gravestone for her in a local cemetery. But the question still remains, was that put up by the family in memory of her, or is she really still in the house? We don't know, but there have been enough reports to believe she at least visits.
We have Diana in Independence contributing to our ghost stories today. Welcome to Central Standard, Diana. Diana? Creepy.
Yeah.
Diana was there. Now she's not. Dave in Casey Mo.
Hello.
Hello. Dave is there. Welcome to Central Standard.
Okay, you talked about cases where something that really happened that might have turned into a haunting. Well, see, I'm totally blind, and I was at my school reunion a few years ago. They have a pipe organ there, and I love that instrument. I had permission to play it in the night as long as I wanted to. So I was in there playing. Of course, I needed no light in the auditorium. I was totally blind. So here I was playing along, and I found out about this later. The night watchman came by about 1 o'clock in the morning, and he heard the organ music, and of course the auditorium was dark. So he called and woke the school superintendent up in the middle of the night and said, "Hey, we got a problem. This auditorium, it's haunted. The organ is playing, and nobody is in there." And so superintendent said, "Well, no, Dave, he's playing. You go in there and talk to him." The guy said, "No, I'm not going in there and talking to that. That auditorium's haunted. Nobody's in there playing that organ. It's haunted." So I suppose to this day, that watchman probably still believes that auditorium was haunted.
Thank you very much, Dave. And pipe organs are creepy enough, right, Mary?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Phantom of the Opera and all that. Absolutely.
Why do you think we as a region and largely as a society are so obsessed with the supernatural, but still skeptical nonetheless?
Well, it has a lot to do with the fact that we're mortal. You know, what comes next? And regardless of what your beliefs are, spiritual or otherwise, there's always that question. People have, passed away on an operating table and come back to report what they've seen. Ghosts are something that tell us that maybe this is not all that exists. And I think that's really one of the things that is a wonderful part of humanity, is that hope and that feeling that perhaps there's something greater than us and better than us.
Our guest is Mary Barrill, author of The Haunted Boomslick, Ghosts, Ghouls, and Monsters of the Missouri Heartland. She joins us from the KBIA studios in Columbia. Mary, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much. This was delightful. And happy Halloween again.